This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Car shopping can be confusing with terms like dealer price, list price, and invoice. TrueCar shows you what other people paid for the car you want, so you can recognize a good price. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. I'm one of the first people who told you the NBA doesn't have a league, they have a player. And that player is LeBron James. Whether you love or hate LeBron James, you probably are not indifferent. You will watch LeBron James in a way you will watch no other player in the NBA. And for many years, the NBA was fortunate because LeBron James was in the Eastern Conference, and the Eastern Conference was a collection of also-rans, but LeBron was able to advance to the finals 8 straight years. And as a part of that, 9 years overall, I believe, as a part of that, you came to care about whether or not LeBron was going to win a championship, about whether or not he was going to ever come close to catching Michael Jordan in his 6-year championships. And everything kind of surrounding LeBron James was covered under a microscope. So in the offseason, LeBron decides to join the Lakers. The Lakers are a young, talented team, and things went very well early in LeBron James's tenure with the Lakers. And then he made the decision to try and trade for Anthony Davis, and the wheels came off the Laker franchise. I think anyone who argues anything other than there's a before and after AD here. AD, before AD, everything was going fairly well for the Lakers in the context of they were going to make the playoffs, and it was likely that they were going to be able to potentially at least contend for maybe even winning a series. Remember, the Lakers climbed all the way to number 4 in the Western Conference. LeBron gets hurt. He injures his groin. He goes out. He misses a lot of games. Lakers go, I believe, 6-12 with LeBron James out. But they're still right there in the periphery of contending for the playoffs. Everybody feels like when LeBron comes back, everything will be okay. And then during the week of the Super Bowl, LeBron and Rich Paul, his agent, decide to try to put the squeeze on the Lakers. They decide to try and trade for the Lakers and make a decision to the Lakers do, trade for Anthony Davis and bring him in, and they're willing to give up everybody in the process. They're willing to give up everybody to get Anthony Davis. All of the young players on the Lakers find out that LeBron James effectively stabbed them in the back, and they are broken as a relationship in any way at all. Completely and totally broken as a franchise. And ever since that moment, the Lakers have been falling apart, and that crystallized over the weekend. They lose to the Bucks. That's no great awfulness because the Bucks are obviously fantastic. But then they go on and they also lose inexplicably to the Phoenix Suns, who are the worst team in the NBA, really. Or at least the worst team in the Western Conference by far. Maybe the Cavs could be worse. Maybe the Knicks could be worse. So the entire thing is an ugly mess of a situation. Defend your boys, Danny G. Are you willing to acknowledge now that their season is over and this is an abject disaster?
Didn't we already do this last week on the show? I mean, we admitted that then.
I don't think so. There was not a complete acknowledgement that the Lakers were a dumb. No.
We said that they needed to get to the 7th seed to have a chance to win
correct.
A series.
But there was not a complete acknowledgement that the Lakers have no chance to make the playoffs and that they are a dumpster fire. Are you willing to acknowledge now, for the record, before God and everyone, that the Lakers are a dumpster fire and that they have no chance to make the playoffs?
It's not over.
There you go.
The
That's what you said
sings.
Last time. You wouldn't acknowledge it. You
because,
have to.
Clay, I'm not gonna say that they can't win 19. Okay, they can't win 19 games in a row.
They wouldn't necessarily have to win 19 in a row, but at this point,
well, you need the other teams to completely collapse.
If you're looking at the possibility, I mean, they are right now. I mean, this is I think the storyline here that is not getting enough attention is how much of a disaster this is for the NBA. The NBA gets protected by the media because it's a lazy narrative, but people decided the NBA is the good league, right? Good in quotation marks. And the NFL is the bad league, bad in quotation marks. And so everything that fulfills that narrative, and the media is a big part of this. There's almost no one who covers the NBA that will ever rip the NBA. Whereas the media that covers the NFL rip the NFL and Roger Goodell like crazy. It's almost impossible to find anybody who covers the NBA that has said a negative word about Adam Silver or will say anything bad about the league at all. And I've talked about this. The NBA ratings are down double digits this year. When the NFL ratings were down, everybody, myself included, made a big storyline out of why the NFL ratings were down, out of the story for the league. The NBA is down precipitously now, worse than the NFL was ever down on a year-to-year basis. And probably the first time you're hearing about it is from me. And it's going to be an unmitigated disaster for the NBA if LeBron is not in the playoffs at all. Because you're trending towards what could be a real disaster, which is the possibility of a Warriors-Raptors NBA Finals, which would be the worst possible result for NBA television ratings and everybody else. And what I've been arguing for a long time is that when LeBron leaves the NBA, we're going to have a total collapse of NBA ratings like happened when Michael Jordan left the NBA. LeBron's ratings during his NBA rise have never risen as high as Michael Jordan's ratings have. But when Jordan's Bulls dynasty ended back in 1998, everything in the NBA, it took like 15 years for the NBA to build back up even remotely close to where they were before Jordan left. And that's because back then the NBA didn't have a league, they had a player. I think the NBA is uniquely susceptible to the nationalization of their overall storyline with a couple of key players. It's a star-driven league, and that can be good when the bright and shining light of the star is Michael Jordan or LeBron James-esque. But when LeBron James shuffles off of the stage and is no longer the reigning supreme athlete superstar, it's a big drop-off. People just don't care that much about Kevin Durant. They really don't. Giannis is never going to be the same level of LeBron because he's a foreign-born player playing in Milwaukee. Nobody really cares about him. James Harden, all right, maybe a little bit. But there's just nobody who's going to step into the limelight and be anywhere near what LeBron James is. And that's going to be a major issue for them. And already the ratings have collapsed because LeBron's gone west and they're playing for the Lakers. The Lakers play the Clippers tonight in what should be a big game, because the Clippers are the LA team that nobody gives any credit to, and yet they're the team that's probably going to make the playoffs and also the team that is in much better free agent position and maybe much more likely to be able to go out and sign a big-time free agent. So this is an abject disaster for LeBron James and the Lakers. And effectively, if the Lakers lose tonight, they really are. I mean, you basically can start to count their magic number in terms of being eliminated, because they're 4.5 games out right now. If they lost to the Clippers tonight, they'd go to 5.5 out with 18 to go and effectively have eliminated themselves. I mean, I think we're trending towards a storyline here where the Lakers just shut LeBron James down for the last 10 games and play all the young guys.
Yeah, I think Laker fans started to turn the page after losing that 12-point lead to the Bucks at home. It seemed like for three quarters they played really good ball. They were in control of that game, and then they squandered it in the last 2 minutes of the game. They imploded and wound up losing by 10. So that right there, that was the end of the season. That's what it felt like watching that game.
So what I already think you can almost turn the page. I mean, because I can't even imagine what an NBA playoffs without LeBron James is going to be like, because it's the first 2 years, I think, of his career with the Cavs, he didn't make the playoffs. But now at the age of 34, he's not going to make it in year one with the Lakers. And the storyline is going to be pretty interesting here as you go into the offseason, because what move are the Lakers going to make that's going to immediately erase the stench of this year's season? I just don't see it. I mean, I guess they can go back to the Pelicans had in hand and offer, what did they not offer this past season? So I'm not even sure that the Pelicans are going to still deal with them, right? I mean, I still think there's the likelihood that that Anthony Davis is going to go somewhere other than the Lakers. And if that happens, I don't know what the move is that is going to be made. And I think what is going to start to happen, and may have already happened, is there's going to start to be whispers in the NBA circles asking big-time superstars, wait a minute, LeBron is going to turn 35 next year, right? In the relatively early part of the NBA season. And he's got this massive contract, and he's going to have three more years left at the end of this year. Do you want to go, if you're a young NBA player, and tie yourself to LeBron James? I mean, I think that's going to be the whisper, right? Because he's going to turn 35, then he's going to turn 36, then he's going to turn 37 with the Lakers. Is he still at the point in his career where he can lead a team to a championship? Again, I said this back when the Anthony Davis trade first started to be rumored. I understand why LeBron wants Anthony Davis. I don't understand, outside of flattery, why Anthony Davis wants to be with LeBron James. Because Anthony Davis, theoretically, is still on the upswing of his career. I don't understand why Anthony Davis would want to be with LeBron James on the downswing of his career.
Could it be that Rich Paul is brainwashing Anthony Davis?
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I said at the time, and I continue to say this. I don't understand. Look, how Rich Paul can be representing multiple guys and giving them the best possible advice when he's got conflicts of allegiance, right? Because if he says something to Anthony Davis, that could be a conflict in terms of his advising LeBron James.
Well, you're forgetting that a lot of young players grew up idolizing LeBron.
No, I'm not forgetting it, but I think that's a sign of why you need a great advisor.
But you are forgetting it if you're saying, why would he want to play with him? You saw that look on his face when LeBron made that one-legged three-pointer to ice that game against AD's Pelicans. The camera immediately went to Anthony Davis.
Right, but he's got to be more sophisticated than being a kid all caught up in his feelings who's excited when LeBron James texts him, right? I understand that, because I said this when the show happened, that Anthony Davis is thinking like a 16 and 17-year-old kid who grew up hoping to play in the NBA more than he's thinking about a 25 or 26-year-old businessman. And it's great that LeBron James likes you and that he text messages you and that he wants to be on your team, and that's got to be flattering to his ego. But you got to divorce yourself from 16, 17, 18-year-old Anthony Davis and think about yourself as a business. And it makes no sense for you, a rising asset, to attach yourself to a declining asset.
But when LeBron is done playing, Anthony Davis would still be playing for one of the best brands in all of sports. So why would Anthony Davis not want to be the face of the Lakers?
I don't buy into the whole brand angle anymore. I think brands matter if you win.
The Lakers brands are still one of the best organizations in all of sports.
Doesn't matter if you don't win. The reason why Anthony Davis said he wanted to leave the Pelicans.
That's why he wants to leave the Pelicans. He wants to be in a city that matters.
I don't think that factors in.
You've argued that Boston or L.A. is the mecca of sports right now. So why would you not want to play in one of those cities?
But the L.A. is the mecca of sports because the Dodgers contend right now for the World Series.
And you threw LeBron into that argument.
No, LeBron is the biggest star. There's no doubt. But LeBron is bigger than the Lakers. If you had to choose right now, players make franchises now. Franchises don't make players. The Lakers, the city of Los Angeles, because of both the Chargers and the Rams, tremendous success on the field in the NFL. But LeBron is a declining asset on a team that I don't see as being able to contend for a championship for years to come. And I think what we're going to see, and I said this at the time, I think what we're going to see with LeBron to the Lakers is a replay of what happened with Kobe Bryant. I think that LeBron is going to get a little bit worse every year over the course of these 4 years, and the Lakers are going to be hamstrung because everybody out there in the NBA at large is going to look at declining LeBron James and say, they need more than one good player. Why would I go attach myself to this franchise right now, because I don't want to commit for multi-years beyond beyond when LeBron James is going to be there, because they're going to go right back into rebuild. And I think this is going to get, by the way, ugly in Los Angeles. I think the Laker fans are going to turn on LeBron James in a big way, because you could criticize Kobe Bryant for maybe being overpaid down the stretch of his career. But one thing you couldn't criticize Kobe Bryant for was giving every scintilla of his ability on the basketball court, night in and night out. I mean, passing the ball into the backside of the basketball stanchion is like, if you're coaching JV basketball and one of your guys does that, you immediately bench him and you might not put him back in for the rest of the game. Leaving your guy wide open at the three-point line like LeBron James did in that game against the Grizzlies, and then blaming your teammates when nobody rushes out to cover him, is an indictment as well. LeBron is sulking up and down the basketball court. He is not giving his full effort. I mean, Danny G, you got that. What about you, Eddie? Are you with me here that LeBron is basically turned into the kid with the ball in the neighborhood that everybody can remember at some point in time, who doesn't get his way and he decides to take the ball home? That's what I see with LeBron James. He's petulant. He's spoiled. He's behaving like a brat on the basketball court. And worst of all, he's not going all out on the court. I mean, passing the ball into the back of the backboard is such an indefensible thing to have happen when you are the best player in the world, or close to the best player in the world. I coach Little League basketball. If one of my guys did that, I would be like, we got to get him out of this game. I don't know what he's doing. I mean, that's not something that a kid can do. When a player like LeBron does it, it's staggering.
The only scenario I can envision to where it would have been worse than the year it's been is if he had suffered some horrific injury and was unable to ever play again. Other than that, it's gone as bad as you could possibly imagine. He's the injury that he obviously sustained, one of the, you know, the injury,
the groin injury,
right?
Yeah.
Caused him to miss time for really the first really significant portion of his career, and then the team cratering and just becoming an embarrassment, and you know, him being petulant and seeing and being more. Look, we all knew he was coming to LA for other reasons, but it certainly seems like already he's more interested in the other reasons than in playing basketball. I thought it would be, you know, he was coming to play basketball and kind of set up his future down the road, but it seems like the way things have gone, he's already interested in his second.
I mean, he put out a video last night. I saw somebody tweeting it. I don't spend much time on Instagram, but a video of himself dancing to some new 2 Chainz song. And like, it's him dancing in front of a mirror along to the song. Did you guys see this? And I saw it come across my Twitter feed, and I was like, this guy is not only tanking with his team, but he's also just looking pathetic. Like, he's not that young to be posting a video of himself in front of a mirror dancing along to a rap song. Like, the dude is 34 years old. I just seems like kind of a weird thing to do. I mean, Adam Silver said something interesting at the Sloan conference. Did you guys see that he got interviewed by Bill Simmons at this conference in Boston? And he actually kind of opened up a little bit and said that he thought that NBA players were really unhappy.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis, weeknights at 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
LeBron, obviously, with 2 straight losses, as the Lakers are now 4.5 games back from the number 8 overall playoff spot, with a game coming up against the Clippers tonight. But I thought what Adam Silver said was amazingly interesting. That his guys, who are multimillionaires in the league, live in an age of anxiety and are profoundly unhappy. And the way he described these guys, with their heads down, they're living in their phones, and he contrasted it with Isaiah Thomas saying championships are won on the bus, that the relationships between guys on the team is what ultimately leads to championships. And now you have a lot of different individual players that are in their silos, and they aren't able to connect with the other people on their team. And part of this may be the age difference. Obviously, LeBron is a lot older than the young guys on the Lakers. But I just got a good email from Chad, and he has this to say. And by the way, I want to open up phone lines and not only ask you whether or not you buy into the fact that LeBron has quit on this team, but has LeBron, because LeBron's an interesting bridge, right? LeBron is really a bridge from the Jordan era to this modern day post-millennial generation almost of kids that are coming up now. And the kids, they call them the iPhone generation, right? And your kids are a lot like mine. My kids don't have iPhones yet, but technology is all-encompassing for them. When I was growing up, we had the Nintendo, then we had the Sega Genesis, then we had, you know, the PlayStation, all those different things. And I'm sure our parents are like, oh my God, these guys play video games all the time. But we played video games. Nowadays, kids watch other kids play video games. They watch other kids open packages. And you have what's called the iPhone generation. iGen is what is kind of the terminology that's for them out there. And a lot of the young guys in the NBA, they can't ever remember an era when the iPhone didn't exist. And so they have come up lost completely in the world of their phone. One of the interesting studies you find is that young kids today are hyper anxious. They're very fearful. When I was a kid growing up, what was the thing you wanted when you turned 16 or 17 years old? You wanted to get your driver's license. You wanted that freedom. You wanted to be able to get out of your house, take one of your parents' cars, or get in the car with your friends and be able to go places. You know, one of the fascinating studies that's out there right now is that kids aren't that eager to get their driver's license anymore. They aren't out there feeling like they need to be able to get on the road and go visit their friends. They're actually a little fearful about getting their driver's license. You or I, when we were growing up, if you're around my age, you had to get on the phone to talk to somebody. I remember that this thing doesn't even exist anymore. But do you remember call waiting? Like what a big deal it was if you had a teenager in your house, because a teenager would get on your phone line and it would be busy for like hours at a time. Do you remember this? And if you didn't have call waiting, like call waiting was a necessity if you had a teenager, because if you're around my age, you remember that era when your brother or sister was on the phone and you were waiting for a call and you couldn't get it. Or sometimes you'd get in a fight with them because they didn't click over. You're like, it's beeping. Why didn't you click over? Somebody's trying to get in touch with me. Or when you made plans to go somewhere, everybody had to meet up there and you had to wait. And maybe your one friend had a beeper back in the day. But if you went to a movie, everything had to be really scheduled in advance. Like, we got to get everybody on the phone and make sure everybody's showing up for the 7:30 movie. Because if they show up at 9:30, we'll never see them. We won't see them till the next day when we get back home and we have to make a telephone call. Well, these kids are living so much in their phones now that they're Snapchatting every day. What was it like, the Snap series where you want to be able to snap back and forth for like 400 days in a row or whatever else? And they never have to worry about the phone line being occupied because they've all got their own phones, but they don't actually do anything. They live so inside the phones and they're so hyper-connected inside of those phones that they live in a little state of anxiety because they're perpetually worrying about their notifications, about whether their phone is buzzing, and it's impossible to get away and escape from whatever social universe you've created. You're always on call. And I wonder about that with the NBA too. Is there a real benefit at this point in time to being an athlete and being on social media? Maybe the benefit is girls. This is also fascinating. They said in the NBA now, when guys go into cities, they don't really go out anymore. Used to be when you were in the NBA, you would go out to a bar, you'd go out to a restaurant, you would hang out in the city. Now those guys just get on Instagram and they just get on Twitter and they just pick up girls and have them come straight to their hotel room. We never go out. The social component of many of these guys is, I think, lacking. They marinate in their music. They're isolated on their phones. And this ties in with an email that Chad just sent me. How are you a leader when you are so lost in your own world that you can't see the external universe? This is from Chad. A leader is someone that sacrifices for the greater good, not themselves. It was evident LeBron was out for himself the moment Kyrie left him high and dry in Cleveland. That was the moment. That was the moment when LeBron was exposed for not being a leader. We gave him a bye due to the weak Eastern Conference and shifted blame to Kyrie. How could you leave LeBron? LeBron's actions, this is Chad emailing me, LeBron's actions since he arrived in LA have been self-serving to say the least. He isn't capable of teaching and mentoring the young talent to come together and win. He's only worried about sipping expensive wine and making marginal TV shows. The icing on the case, the Anthony Davis debacle. Sure, the Pelicans were leaking stories left and right. The whole situation was a product of LeBron not understanding the landscape. When the Lakers didn't land AD and looked like a clown show, they needed to have someone take control of the Lakers, and LeBron couldn't do it. LeBron caused the Lakers to collapse. He is the majority owner in the failing business. The Lakers should trade him, be done with him. This is according to Chad. They look pathetic and weak, the Lakers do, with a bad leader dictating all their moves. I think there's some argument and truth there. I think there really is. We're going to open up the phone lines. I think we got Dub back. Do we have Dub? 877-996-6369. But before I go to the calls, I want to ask you guys this. Are you happier now than you were before social media existed? It's a big question. It's a broad question. And obviously there are other factors that play into overall happiness. But Danny G, are you more happy now that you have social media than you were before social media existed?
No. And I see my friends less often. And I think one of the reasons why is because we communicate on our phones through text a lot, or through social media like Instagram. So in a way you feel connected, even though physically you're not ever hanging out with that person any longer.
It's funny you mentioned that, because every now and then I'll have friends over to watch games, and I have a little bit of an abnormal job, but I will find myself trying to talk to my social media following as opposed to talking to my friends that I'm having a beer sometimes with and watching games with. And I went out to watch the Tennessee-Kentucky game on Saturday, and I also went and watched the U.S. women's game between U.S. women, the soccer game here in Nashville between the U.S. women and Great Britain. And I tweeted twice for like an 8-hour period. You know, react at halftime to the Tennessee-Kentucky game, react at the end. I didn't read a single mention. And I felt so much more engaged in the interaction that I was involved with. And the same thing was true at the women's game, which I don't know that I even mentioned that I went to until I just said it right now on the radio. And I was there with my 11-year-old and other friends watching that game. And I do think that you're much more engaged in the game when you're not completely in your phone. Now, sometimes, look, I'm a dad of three. There are a lot of nights when everybody else is asleep in my house and I get on social media and interact, and I love that because there are other people out there to interact with, and otherwise I'm in a dark house watching a game by myself. But if I'm a younger guy and I'm single, I definitely wonder about that. What about you, Eddie Garcia? Are you do you think that social media has made your life happier?
Honestly, I'm only on it for work. So
if you were, and that's interesting too, like I'm not on Facebook at all. I don't post anything on Facebook. My wife will get on there and post things, but I never get on Facebook. So I just completely am off that because I'm on Twitter so much for work that I'm like, the last thing I want to do is read somebody's political opinion that I went to high school with on Facebook and, you know, be reading all these comments and everything else. I enjoy sometimes seeing people's kids, but I don't even get on and do that anymore because Facebook is it seems like a cesspool to me. I just don't want that on there. So if you weren't at work, would you be on social media?
Well, I am on Facebook. I have nieces and nephews that, you know, live across the country that I do kind of keep tabs on because of that. But as far as Twitter goes, I would not be on Twitter if it weren't for this job.
Yeah, it's interesting. What about you, Roberto? Are you active? I mean, I know I follow all you guys on social media, but I mean, would you be, has social media made your life better?
Definitely not. It's a good question because I remember thinking about when I didn't have social media and I was completely fine without it. I don't have Facebook anymore. I don't have a Snapchat either. And I'm kind of like Eddie. If it wasn't for work, I wouldn't be on Twitter either.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think back to a pre-iPhone era. You know, when you just had a standard phone and you couldn't get on all of the different apps. And even I had the BlackBerry and I could do that before. But I remember I was writing a column at CBS. And I would write a column, but then I would also just, in the middle of the day, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to go golf today. And I would just leave and I would go golf and I wouldn't be concerned about whatever news might happen during the day while I was on the golf course because Twitter didn't exist. And Facebook didn't really exist unless you were sitting in front of your desktop or your laptop, you know, at work. And so I was like, well, you know, whatever news happens, I'll get it. I don't need to have it instantaneously. And I think what social media does a great job of, and look, make no mistake about it, we're on in San Francisco right now, and there are guys waking up early in the morning that work at Twitter, and they work in the Facebook area, and Snapchat, and all these different businesses, and they're geniuses because they have constructed an app that you feel like you have to use. And one way that they make you feel like you have to use it is, I'll tell you, when I used to be able to read all my mentions, when I would spend the time to do that, you in your mind think, oh my God, I have to react to this instantaneously because there's 20 people that are tweeting you saying, hey, what about this? What about this? What about this? And it feeds your ego because what it convinces you is, oh, I matter so much. I have to be able to respond to this instantaneously. But what you don't realize is, I remember when I was practicing law, I was a young guy. And a lot of the older lawyers there said, you got to be careful. So what do you mean you got to be careful? So you got to be careful as a lawyer because the billable hour, you know, you get paid by the hour. And when you're a young guy, you come in and you think, oh my God, I can't believe I'm making this much money. This is awesome. And you're grinding away. And then you start to have a life and you start to spend money and everything else. And they said, what you realize is you got the golden handcuffs on. I said, what do you mean? I said, golden handcuffs. They're not typical handcuffs. You know, you're not going in the back of a police cruiser on your way to jail. But these golden handcuffs that you put on, you can't get out of them. You live your life in a way that demands that you have to keep the golden handcuffs on. And it happens kind of gradually. And then you look down and you're like, wait a minute, I'm not free anymore. You got the golden handcuffs on. And I think there's an element of golden handcuffs that's going on right now with social media in much of this country. And certainly it would apply with Adam Silver's comments, the commissioner of the NBA that we just played for you. Certainly it would apply with the way he's describing NBA players and how they feel. Because when you get in your mentions, I mean, think about how weird it is that Kevin Durant is the second best in the world at what he does. No matter what you do, you are probably nowhere near the second best in the world at what you do. That was before this season started. Kevin Durant may be the best in the world at what he does right now. But Kevin Durant felt compelled to create fake Twitter profiles to respond to his critics on social media. Think about that. This dude is the best in the world at what he does. And yet, he is on social media reading what a bunch of dudes who couldn't make 3 out of 10 free throws are saying about his game. And he's so impacted by what those dudes think that he's creating fake accounts to be able to respond to them. He's not even responding to them from his own accounts. He's responding to them from fake accounts. What is the benefit to Kevin Durant of having a social media account at all? If he suddenly wiped out all of his social media accounts, do you know what we would judge Kevin Durant on? Entirely his basketball play. Maybe occasionally when he went off on the media. But to me, we have a broken ecosystem in many ways. If the guy who is the best in the world at his chosen profession is anxious and antagonized by the way that people respond to him on social media. And everybody's personality is different. I think I tend to have a personality where I don't really focus on negativity very much. My wife makes fun of me about this. I'm the kind of guy who, if you say 9 negative things about him, I remember the 1 positive. A lot of people are the opposite. If you say 9 great things about him, they remember the 1 negative thing. I only remember the positive. And I think that's a huge asset for me, because I think a lot of people couldn't do my job because there is so much negativity in this day and age of social media. I tend to focus on only the positive, and I really don't hold grudges. But if you hold grudges and if you focus on negativity, social media is the worst thing that could ever happen to you. You know who's not on social media? I think I'm correct in this. Michael Jordan, right? Peyton Manning. Probably the best football player who's retired in the modern era, and the best basketball player who's retired in the modern era. And you know what we think about Peyton Manning and Michael Jordan? We really like them. You know who's on social media? LeBron James. Is it harder to lead from social media? I think it probably is. Dub, last question I'm going to bring in you, and then I want to open up the phone lines. I want to ask that question for everybody out there. You can think about it from a sports context, but also from your own life context. Is Adam Silver right? Is social media, are you happier now than you were in a pre-social media era? And what have you chosen to do, maybe to adjust the way that you live in our modern times? Dub, you're younger than everybody else. What's your social media, you know, sort of footprint, for lack of a better term? And are you happier now? Do you even remember an era when you didn't have social media?
Yeah, Facebook, when it really got big, I was probably a freshman in high school when I first got Facebook. So, I mean, I've had social media in my life pretty much my entire, you know, young to adult life. So, pre-social media for me was just childhood, and it was great. But social media has been a part of my adult life pretty much, you know, since I was 14 or 15 years old.
Do people that are around, like, so... You're such a young, it's fascinating, because a lot of the young guys in the NBA would be similar to you in that they don't, like, you're the iPhone generation. It's almost impossible for you to remember an era when the iPhone didn't exist. Do you think that there is a connection between the youngest people in America today are the most anxious of all time? Like, they're more, it's pretty crazy to think about. Young people today are more anxious than people were during World War II, during Vietnam. Right? Like, you actually could go into the draft and get shot and killed, and guys were less anxious during World War II and Vietnam than kids are today. Do you think it's directly connected to that hyper connection to the phone?
Yeah, I think it is, because, I mean, I'll be hanging out with people sometimes, and they'll literally, I mean, they won't freak out, but they'll, you know, lose their phone in the couch or forget where they put it, and that's the only thing they care about until they find it. And in the NBA, it's such a, the Twitter is such like a part of the culture in the NBA. I mean, I'd be hard pressed to find 5 NBA players that aren't on social media.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I'm going to open up the phone lines because, again, we'll replay those Adam Silver comments for you as the prelude to taking your calls. If you haven't heard those Adam Silver comments, they're pretty remarkable for an NBA commissioner to come out and a commissioner of any sports league and say what he said. But I think social media uniquely is embedded in the DNA now of the NBA in a way that it isn't in Major League Baseball, the NFL, or the NHL. There's a few guys, Antonio Brown, really, that regularly, Le'Veon Bell, a couple of Steelers, honestly, that have really kind of used social media in a similar way to what it regularly occurs in the NBA. But by and large, there aren't NHL social media stories. There aren't Major League Baseball social media stories. By and large, it's an NBA phenomenon. Yet, it sounds like when you hear these quotes from Adam Silver, it's not an overall positive for the psychological health and well-being of NBA players.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
In the wake of Adam Silver's comments about negative influence of social media on NBA players, do you think social media has made your own life better or worse? 1,000 of you have voted. These are people who follow me on Twitter. 78% saying worse. Those are people who are instantaneously responding to my poll question that I just put up. That's pretty wild. 78% worse. We'll see how that goes. Ed, you can go vote in that on social media at Clay Travis. Ironic given the perspective. I'm going to go to your calls. But first, there are probably a lot of people out there saying, okay, why is this topic coming up now? Adam Silver over the weekend said that NBA players were not happy. And he gave a big reason why as social media. We have that audio for people who are just waking up and just kind of starting the show. I want you guys to be able to hear it. Then I'm going to go to your calls. Here's the audio from Adam Silver.
Our players are young. We have young people in our office. I think we live a bit in the age of anxiety. I think part of it is a direct product of social media.
Yes.
And I think those players we're talking about, when I meet with them, what strikes me is that they are truly unhappy.
Yeah.
This is not some, like, you know, show they're putting on for the media. When you get, you know, when you have relations with a lot of players, when I'm one-on-one with a lot of these guys, you know, I think to the outside world, they see the fame, the money, all the trappings that go with it. They're the best in the world at what they do. You know, they say, how is it possible? Like, they could even be complaining. And I hear this on television all the time. If you're around a team in this day and age, their headphones on, they're isolated and their head down. Like, as soon as it used to be, I remember years ago, Isaiah Thomas said to me, championships are won on the bus. And he meant that. And I disagree. One of the comments from the earlier panelists was, oh, forget those other five guys on the team. Those five guys on the team were critically important, even if they hardly had any minutes. All, you know, usually they were veteran players. They were leaders who were able to take players aside in a way a coach couldn't, you know, because they'd lived through it. It was just something that a teammate could do that a coach couldn't, or certainly an owner or somebody or an administrator in the team. A lot of these young men are genuinely unhappy. I mean, some have come from very difficult circumstances. That doesn't help.
Right.
Some of them are amazingly isolated.
So that's Adam Silver. And I think about it as the Lakers have fallen apart and LeBron James arguably, I don't even think it's arguably, I think it's probably reflected by the numbers, has the biggest social media footprint of anyone in all of sports. And I don't think social media is helping LeBron. But I'm curious, in your own lives and in your own way, is social media a benefit or a hindrance in your own life? Chad in Tennessee on the VIP line, what's up?
Good morning, Clay. I think I'm probably neutral on that because it didn't matter that I had it, but my kids started getting older, so I started wanting to follow them and stay connected with them because to that iPhone generation you're talking about, they swayed so heavily toward that, Instagram, Snapchat, and all that. I kind of had to do that to keep up with them. But mainly for me on social media and Twitter, I follow the people like you and others that I want to know more about, and I follow my favorite teams. I try to stay out of the political aspect and component of it. But crazy as it sounds, I mean, I'd love to get your thoughts on this and hear what your viewers have to say. You're probably going to get this year, because our church just did a thing on our pastor wanted us to fast, give up something, and then you got Lent coming. I was talking to people after the sermon was over, and I mean, I could not believe the number of people that were like, I'm giving up Facebook.
Yeah.
It had consumed their life to the point where they were like, I'm giving this up for 21 days to see what my life can be like without it. And so that is crazy. But then you were talking about the burner thing, and I'll let you get to everybody else. I mean, I think one of the greatest forms of burner emails and trolling and all that was when Dez forgot to log out of his own account and still was, as Dez Bryant, was making a comment about himself and didn't log out and use one of his burner Twitter accounts and got busted for it. So
yeah, I mean but the fact that you would feel compelled as one of the best athletes in the world at what you do to have a burner account is mind-blowing to me. We saw, obviously, the president, was it the 76ers, where everything got blown up with him because of supposedly a burner account. This is, I just, I undoubtedly benefit in a massive way. Social media has been a huge positive for me in terms of growing my career, in terms of being able to do what I do. There's a 0% doubt. I've been a longtime Twitter shareholder. But sometimes what's good for you cannot be good for other people or the culture as a whole. And I'm not even sure now that it's necessarily that beneficial to me. And I think you're right. I think Chad is right that there are a lot of people for Lent, when you're deciding what to give up, that are going to give up social media. I'm gonna get as many of your calls as I can here. Let me keep rolling. Jeff in Pasadena. I got a lot of thoughts on this. Jeff in Pasadena, what's up?
Hey, Clay, what's going on? Great show, as always. You're asking everybody about the social media thing. It's benefited me, I think, more so than it's hurt me. I mean, you know, it's because of social media I was able to reconnect or keep in contact with people that, you know, I went to elementary school with, who I never would have had a chance and opportunity to reconnect with before. You know, so it's kind of cool in that aspect. I mean, the caller a few minutes ago said I tried to stay out of the political, you know, realm of it, because apparently anything that you say or do now is offensive to somebody on some aspect or some level. So I kind of try to steer clear of that. But as far as the LeBron James thing, listen, I got to be honest with you, but that's a phenomenal basketball player, okay? But he reminds me so much of Tiger Woods. And the reason why I say that is, and maybe you'll understand this, I hope you do, but, you know, when Tiger Woods was winning and he was winning all these tournaments and everybody was, you know, I like to use the term ball watching, okay? And everybody was ball watching him, and he was, you know, winning, and he was high-fiving and doing everything he possibly could, you know, to make the fans think he was a good guy. As soon as he didn't win, as soon as things didn't start going okay for him, he was selling clubs, he was spinning, he was doing it. It's the same thing with LeBron James. It's like, you know what, when he's winning, everybody is, yeah, LeBron's the greatest basketball player in the world, and I'm the man, I'm better than Michael Jordan, I'm the greatest of all time. As soon as he loses, he's blaming somebody else for it. And, you know, I'm kind of old school. I'm a diehard Pistons fan. I've been a Pistons fan since 1980, okay? You know, back then, guys like Isaiah Thomas and Larry Bird and Magic, they didn't go to other teams to win titles. They said, okay, you know what? Larry Bird won it on this year. Okay, you know what? Now I'm going to come back next year, and I'm going to try to win one with my own team. I don't want to go to another team. I don't want to, you know, take more money to go someplace else. And the food always at the
Yeah, top. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, Jeff. I can't let somebody have an eight-minute call on a phone that people can't hear you on. But I do think LeBron is a front runner in the context of when things are going really well, everything is rolling with LeBron. What I would say is different maybe about this year is it seems like he's quitting. When he's throwing the ball into the back of the backboard and on an inbounds pass, when he is not covering his man out on a wide open three against the Memphis Grizzlies. Frankly, when you are losing to the Atlanta Hawks, the Memphis Grizzlies, the New Orleans Pelicans, and the Phoenix Suns on four straight road games, when those all four of those teams you have lost to, we're not saying that the Lakers need to be playing extraordinary basketball, but if they had just beaten the Hawks, if they had just beaten the Suns, if they had just beaten the Pelicans, and if they had just beaten the Memphis Grizzlies, they'd be in pretty decent shape to make the playoffs right now. If they had just split in those four, they'd be in somewhat decent shape to make the playoffs right now. Let's go to Tommy in Florida. Tommy, what's up?
Hey, man, great show. First of all, I'm probably the only listener you have that's never been on Facebook, and I've never been on Twitter. So I don't even know what those pages are. I know nothing about
it. It is interesting,
I've never seen them. I have no idea. So I
was that a conscious choice, or how did you end up being such a tech luddite?
I just had no interest. Like your last caller went rambling on about hooking up with old friends from like elementary school. Those are people you haven't known in 30, 40 years, and who cares?
Yeah.
You know, spend more time with the people that are around you, I guess, is to me.
Yeah.
I have a bigger point, though. I'd love to hear what you got to say about it. I think there's a huge cultural shift that we've had in this country, and it deals with entitlement. And here's where it comes from. Our culture used to prize age, and you got wisdom through age. But one of your callers said, I had to get on Facebook to keep up with my kids. In other words, children, kids that are 10, 11, 12 years old, are smarter than people who are 50, 60, 70 years old. Because of the technology, this creates, it's like our entire world has changed. We've got 45-year-old, 50, 60-year-old people want to be 13-year-olds. They want to play the video games. They want to be on Facebook. They want to do the things that their kids are doing. They're trying to keep up with their children. And we're saying youth is what we want instead of age and wisdom. And so the kids are, and I say kids meaning even 20-year-olds, 21, you know, these young NBA guys. Everybody wants to be them because they are smarter. Am I making sense?
That's brilliant.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
We go down to Alex Marvez, who's been up covering the NFL with the Combine. And Alex, we've been talking a lot about the impact of social media. Obviously, Antonio Brown has been insanely active on social media. Most NFL guys, Le'Veon Bell a little bit, really just the Steelers. Most NFL guys are not. Do you think in your own life that social media has been a positive or a negative?
I think positive if you know how to use it. I mean, but of course, you look, we have people implode all the time, right? I mean, you know, it's amazing, especially during this presidency, just to digress here a little bit. A buddy of mine calls it Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah.
Because people just, this man causes people to react in ways that, you know, are abnormal, cost them their jobs, cost them their livelihood, cost them friendships, et cetera. I mean, so it's interesting in this time, and social media can be used really wisely to build your brand. It can also be, you know, almost career suicide for you. It can almost get you released from a team or, you know, cause you to have major issues. But it's funny. It's either insanely, like you talked about Antonio Brown, or insane, one of the two, right? And I was thinking about this before coming on because I had this feeling you were going to ask me about him. And, you know, it's funny. Is he trying to pull a LeBron James? When LeBron, remember how he left the Miami Heat hanging before he re-signed with Cleveland, and he completely crippled the Miami Heat's off-season plans of, you know, okay, we can go to a plan B without LeBron. But LeBron told him so late into the process that they ended up having to scramble and sign the Luol Dangs of the world and things like that, and you know, basically made sure that the Heat weren't going to be competition, at least as stiff as it was for him. I'm saying this with Antonio Brown. Is he intentionally devaluing himself? In terms of the trade market, is he trying to make himself untradeable to force the Pittsburgh Steelers to cut him? Is he playing a game of chicken with the Pittsburgh Steelers? Is there actually a method to the so-called madness of Antonio Brown? Now, look, you wonder about some of his off-field behavior, just talking about things away from football. And you know, is he you know, an erratic human being, and there is no method to this madness. But if he is trying to work his way out of Pittsburgh, I think he's in without, you know, number one, helping the Steelers out by being able to fetch a high draft pick, or you know, listen, maybe he just wants unfettered free agency and wants to scramble a trade altogether. What better way to do it than to act the way that Antonio Brown has been acting? I mean, that's why it's just weird, and I don't even know if it's intentional, but he's doing a great job to either help his cause the way you look at it one way, or hurt his cause if you look at it another.
Adam Schefter reported Raiders, Redskins, Titans as the three most interested in Antonio Brown so far. If you had to pick one of those three or the field, where does Antonio Brown end up?
You know, the Raiders always do stupid stuff, and that's why, you know, three first-round picks. And, you know, I mean, remember, they're the ones that send a third-round pick to the Steelers for Martavis Bryant, right? And, you know, Mike Mayock, can he really be the voice of reason with John Gruden in terms of at least let's talk this out, let's talk about what actual trade value is, let's talk about, okay, is Antonio Brown, how much is he going to help our team? Are we really ready to win in 2019 in Las Vegas? I mean, so, you know, when it comes to a sucker being born every minute, I think that's where the Raiders or how they're regarded around the NFL right now with John Gruden, and until that changes, I'd have to put them in the front. You know, a little surprising to hear about the Tennessee Titans being in the mix, but maybe they feel they're a couple players away from actually making that push. I mean, to me, Clay, they're like they're like 8-8, 9-7. I mean, they're there, right? But what takes them over the top right now? And maybe they feel another weapon from Marcus Mariota in this, dare I say it, Arthur Smith offense that'll be unveiled in 2019. And then the third one on top of that, the Redskins. Listen, Daniel Snyder, he can't, you know, is he going to start creeping his way back in and making splash decisions? But the Raiders, though, I mean, the Redskins, rather, they need a number one wide receiver, and it's a cap-friendly contract. Of course, the Redskins have another problem. Who's going to throw the football to Antonio Brown. Do we feel Colt McCoy and Antonio Brown are a magic combination? Yeah, I didn't think so either. So that's something to consider there as well. If you better have a plan at quarterback if you're going to be wise and trade for Antonio Brown, because he doesn't want to. I mean, he's had the luxury, and he doesn't appreciate it now. He's had the luxury of playing with Ben Roethlisberger his entire NFL career. Heck, he's had the luxury of never being on a losing team, Clay. The Steelers have always finished at least 500. You know, so, I mean, you're talking about a whole, you know, brave new world here. But I think after the scouting combine, I think there may have been some other teams that ultimately pop up. I think some look at the free agent class of wide receivers and say, this is pretty drecky. We might need to do something. Are we in love with the wide receivers in this year's draft class? And I think you look at that sort of thing, you know, as time goes on and see, okay, do we want to make, I don't even want to say a late pitch for Antonio Brown, because I still think pitches are being taken, because obviously nothing has come along right now that has enticed two teams to come to an agreement upon a deal.
Do you think that Kyler Murray will be the overall number one draft pick?
It's sure looking that way, isn't it? I mean, just, you know, look, the Arizona, and this is the tough part that the Arizona Cardinals are in, right, Clay? If you say, no, we're not looking at Kyler Murray, well, then why do you call them to talk trade? If, in fact, the Cardinals are convinced that Josh Rosen is their franchise quarterback, and after spending the past week in Indianapolis, I'm not so convinced anymore that the Arizona Cardinals think that Josh Rosen is their franchise quarterback. So, you know, but if you want to generate a trade market for the number one pick, well, you know what? You better say, oh, you know, Josh Rosen is our guy for right now. You know what I mean? And little things like that that you could ultimately go back to Josh and say, hey, man, we love you and we're trying to support you, but you got to understand, we're trying to see what's out there for this first pick. And if they don't feel that they need to draft a quarterback and that all things are equal among some of the top, you know, defensive linemen in this draft, and that's clearly where the Cardinals would be going normally with a number one overall pick, I don't blame them for trying to move down. You know, John Gruden was on my SiriusXM show this past week. He says he doesn't see Kyler Murray getting past number four. And then, you know, all of a sudden rumors come out, oh, Derek Carr may be on the trade block, this and that. Look, again, with Gruden, you just don't know. I mean, he's a wild card. He's impulsive. But who's the last rookie quarterback that John Gruden actually wanted to work with and coach? You know, I mean, I think that the theory of John Gruden, the rookie quarterback whisperer, is a lot different than the reality of John Gruden, who'd rather have a veteran player to work with. So I still think, though, there's interest. But here's the problem, too, Clay, and this is what makes it tough. Beside the Cardinals, who moves up? The New York Giants, they don't seem to have interest in a smaller quarterback. It doesn't seem like, you know, and that's what Kyler Murray is, and I'm not sure Pat Shurmur is going to change his ways to adapt to coaching him. The Jacksonville Jaguars, well, if they get Nick Foles and sign him in free agency, do they have to make that much of a push for Kyler Murray? Can they just stand pat and then take the best player available and just think that Nick Foles will be their guy for 2 or 3 years and then move on from there? The Miami Dolphins, they're at 13. They need all the help they can get. Are they going to give up draft picks to number one? So I think, you know, that's the thing. Maybe there's a team from out of nowhere that needs a quarterback that we're not talking about here that tries to do that type of leapfrogging. But that's why I think it's Cardinals or bust. I think there's a realistic chance that it happens with Arizona. But if not Arizona, then I don't see him going number one.
Outstanding stuff as always. We will talk to you next week. Alex Marvez, thanks for getting up early with us.
Thank you, Clay. Be good, baby.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis. Weeknights at 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We have got the Lakers playing tonight against the L.A. Clippers. The Lakers, who are, 19 games remaining in the season. Danny G, you refused early on in the show to acknowledge that the Lakers season was over. Are you willing to acknowledge that their season is over?
I guess you weren't listening because I was being facetious when I said they were going to win every game remaining on the schedule.
Yeah, but you refused. I want a direct question. You are the head of the Laker fan base on this show.
Yeah.
Are you willing to acknowledge that their season is over?
I felt like it was over after the Bucks loss. I told you that because top team in the East, Lakers were leading by a dozen points, played three really good quarters, and then imploded in the final 2 minutes of that game. After that loss to the Bucks, it felt like the season was over.
Okay, it felt like. Is it over?
I'm going to gauge it off tonight's performance. With all this criticism LeBron has taken over the weekend, it's going to be interesting to see how he comes out tonight. Is he going to play balls to the wall, or is he going to throw the ball off the back of the backboard again?
It's one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen a top player do, to make that kind of error.
He was just frustrated. It reminded me of you last week when you went off the rails after Dub had the wrong Ohio on the air. Now, you have more in common with LeBron than you'd probably like to admit. LeBron is a perfectionist. He thinks he is perfect on the court, and the rest of the players around him are scrubs.
I don't think that I'm perfect. I think you guys just all suck.
No, you think you're perfect.
I think I am good at radio.
No, you've said before that you are an island of perfection surrounded by incompetence. No, no. That's a direct quote from you.
No, I say I'm an island of competence surrounded by an ocean of incompetence.
Your name is just Kurt Henning.
I'm competent. I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm just saying I'm competent and all of you guys are incompetent.
If you didn't hear this last week, this was Clay bouncing the ball off the back of the backboard.
What is going on here? Dub, what are you doing?
He's
online.
What are
you doing with your
Ohio.
Life, Dub? Your job is to answer the phones and get the state and the location that someone is from. You tell us that you've got the guy from Ohio who's trying to get to second base, and we go to the caller, and he says he lives in Jacksonville. That guy emailed me, Dub. I'm so angry right now. One of the benefits of having a public email address, and I might have deleted the guy's email because I just didn't want to marinate in your futility. But the guy emailed me and said, I am in Jacksonville, and I never, ever said anything remotely having to do with the fact that I was from Ohio.
Yeah, he tweeted the show over the weekend.
Oh, so
told
you
us
saw that too?
Yes.
Like he definitely reached out to be like, hey, I was not making the show worse. That was all Dub.
Okay, so now you are the LeBron of the show. Defend yourself.
My ratings speak for themselves. That's all I got to do.
But we're
like
your
scoreboard.
Offensive line. I mean, you're Tom Brady. We're your O line.
Yeah, the scoreboard would be that the results speak for themselves. Yeah. If LeBron was in the playoffs, and if he was poised to potentially make a run at the Western Conference Finals, then that would be fine. But my numbers speak for themselves.
Your mind is blown. You have more in common with LeBron than you once thought.
I'm the Anthony Munoz of the show.
I saw Anthony Munoz at the Super Bowl, by the way. Good dude. Anthony Munoz, his son Michael Munoz, a big OutKick fan. So he probably would have been good back in the day as a tackle blocking as well.
How do you think LeBron is going to come out tonight and perform against the Clippers?
I think he's going to be totally indifferent. I think LeBron has already checked out on this season. I think he can look at the standings, maybe because they're playing against the Clippers. He'll be, you know, it's a battle of LA, but when you've got a game with 19 to go against the Clippers and it's absolutely positively must win, I mean, we're not far away from being able to say, hey, let's go ahead and just start the countdown on how many games it is till they're officially eliminated. Because if they lose this game, then I don't think there's any way. Then you'd have 18 left and they'd be, what, 5.5 back from the Clippers? There's no way you're going to catch a team with 5.5 game deficit with 18 to go.